Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Chelsea says hundreds of migrants have arrived in the city over the last week, a story we've heard across the state for months. In fact, the Healey administration says the state's emergency shelter system has had to expand each month since last September. That's the same month that nearly 50 Venezuelan migrants were sent from Texas to Martha's Vineyard by the state of Florida, a move that's under criminal investigation. Attorney Rachel Self represents a handful of those migrants, so we called her to ask if she was surprised by the news coming out of Chelsea.
You know, it really doesn't surprise me. The factors that push people to come here, like oppressive regimes, intense gang violence, and crushing poverty in their home countries, still stand. And people often choose to come to a certain area because they have family connections there, or there's a cultural community already established in that area where they hope to find support. But then calling to mind what happened in September from Florida with the 49 migrants that were lied to and brought to Martha's Vineyard. Obviously, some migrants do not get to choose where they wind up.
There's this another dimension around work that I want to talk with you about, Rachel. And I'm gonna bring you the voice of a migrant. Last September, we spoke with three migrants who recently settled here in the Commonwealth. After crossing the U.S.-Mexico border, one of them, her name was Katrine, traveled with her two children, then 2 and 4. She was working with La Colaborativa in Chelsea. They connected us to her. And Juan Camillo Saavedra was working with the families at La Colaborativa, did some interpreting for us. Here's a bit of that conversation.
Katrine says that the most important thing right now is to find stability through getting her papers, especially her work permit. That's the only obstacle that she needs right now to be able to work. That's what she just wants. She wants to work and have a dignified and honest living and income. Getting her documents straight is the most important. And she's heard that if she doesn't have a work permit, she cannot work here. Or if she gets hired, they're going to pay you a lot less, almost a non-living wage. And she doesn't want that. She wants to have an honest work, life, income, and eventually find a house for her family.
You know, this question of work, Rachel, has been looming, since the first conversations about the families and individuals who came to Martha's Vineyard. You know, when we talked to you in December, when I've talked to people who are working with migrants with other organizations, how long it's taking, how hard it is to get work permits, how badly that piece is needed. Where are we? Are we getting any faster on that? And with people who are arriving now, how long are they looking at before they have an opportunity to work? And I understand that there are those who will say they shouldn't have an opportunity to work. They are undocumented. I get it that that is a thing that is still a source of tension here in the country.
The biggest struggle most migrants face when they arrive is that they can't legally provide for themselves. Usually they do not have any basis to apply immediately for work authorization. And even if they do, processing times for those applications can take many months. So hardworking people who want nothing more than to start a job immediately cannot do that. And this leads to all the other problems that agencies like Chelsea Collaborative are running into. These people want to find food and shelter and other services for the migrants, most of which they would not need to do if the migrants were simply allowed to provide for themselves. The burden is falling on these charitable organizations because the government does not allow people to earn their own way. And this then leads to other challenges that the migrants face upon arrival have to do with the things they've endured along the way here. Many of them have come over on foot, over incredibly long distances, through very dangerous places. If we provided them autonomy when they got here, if we provided them the ability to work lawfully when they got here, which we actually used to do, back before September 11th, 2001, if you were paroled into the United States seeking asylum, the stamp in your passport said, paroled in, work authorized. And then it changed after September 11th due to security concerns. And over time, it's just become more and more difficult. So if I would submit that if the people in Texas that were taken advantage of in their weakest moment, who were already very traumatized, already had been victimized, if they had the ability to go and secure themselves employment, which then would lead to them securing themselves housing, they wouldn't have been as vulnerable to be victimized by the people that victimized them on the ground there.
So so let's check in on those folks. You represent a handful of the migrants who arrived on the Vineyard last September. How are they?
So everybody is doing as well as can be expected. And where the migrants are today is a testament to their own incredible resilience.
Do you sense from them that they are feeling optimistic?
I think it's important to remember when you're considering them that you can't look at how we look at a situation, right? Because they're coming to this from such an extreme place. And I think the bottom line is they're grateful to find good, decent people ready to help them when they get here. We should all be very proud as a community that so many people in our area step up to help those in need. But they don't want to be in need. They're people who have worked hard their entire lives, taken incredible risks to come somewhere where they have a chance to make something of themselves without being ground down by gangs or tyrannical governments. If the government would issue people work authorization on arrival, a lot of these service provider issues would go away.
Do they have work authorization now, Rachel?
They're slowly trickling in. I believe at this point, one person, I think, has work authorization. I'm hoping for some of mine. I finally hit the deadline to be able to apply for one of my clients a couple of weeks ago. We filed immediately as soon as eligible, because when you are seeking asylum in the United States, it's written that you can't even apply for work authorization until a minimum of 150 days after you file your asylum application. And when you file asylum applications, obviously those take time to prepare and make sure that you're doing the best that you can to have the strongest case that you can. So those aren't filed overnight. So I just hit the timeline to be able to file for one of my clients. And then my other clients are trickling in over the next few weeks as far as filing the applications go. And then it's going to be several months for the government to process those applications.
Wow. So it's still a long slog.
Yes, it is. But the hope and resilience of all of them is quite extraordinary. It's inspiring, and I'm grateful, honored, and privileged to have the opportunity to help them.
So I have one last question for you. Rachel, one of our reporters, Gabriella Emanuel, broke a story that Boston Medical Center has changed its policy. I'll read you a little bit. It says, quote, "The hospital is now barring families from seeking shelter there unless they need medical care. Instead, the hospital redirects them to other facilities after a record spike in the number of people staying there." And there have been reports of them getting Ubers and sending people either back to where they stayed the night before, or in some cases, even Ubering people to Logan Airport. And I want to ask you your thoughts on these kinds of extreme measures from places even like Boston Medical Center, which had been a place where people were seeking shelter up until this change in policy, you know, a little more than a week ago.
I mean, the bottom line is no one single agency, no one single office, no one single community can solve this problem. The government really has a responsibility to provide assistance here in this circumstance. And really, it's the federal government that has the responsibility to provide assistance, because the immigration issue and immigration policy is a federal issue. It is not a state issue. And so one of the things that I saw a lot of throughout my work, particularly with the MV flights and the resulting attention that those flights got, is there are several communities throughout the United States that are pro-immigration, that want to welcome these people, that want their help, that know that they want jobs and say, we've got jobs for them to have. So I think that what needs to happen is a mass organization of various agencies and a collaboration throughout the country nationwide that offers people an opportunity to say, yes, my community, we would love to welcome 2,500 people here, and the jobs that are available to them are this. And if they want to take those jobs, then the housing that's available to them is this. But it all harkens back to the requirement for the people to be able to lawfully work. And until the government solves that issue, which truly is, from my perspective, the genesis of all of this, all of these agency problems, all of these organization overburdening, you're going to continue to have those problems.
Attorney Rachel Self there speaking with us yesterday afternoon, now here to talk more about the surprise move by Boston Medical Center and the overburdening of the state's emergency shelter system. WBUR senior health and science reporter Gabriella Emanuel, welcome back.
Hi, good to be here.
So explain this BMC policy. We've just referred to it a couple of times.
Sure. So over the past year, Boston Medical Center and other hospitals have been letting families that have nowhere else to go stay overnight. And this is because even though we have a state-run family shelter system, it can take days or longer to access it. And state field offices and the new Welcome Center close at night. So that leaves these families with nowhere exactly to go. And often they turn to hospital emergency rooms as a safe place that's open 24 hours a day. This looks like bedding on the floor in a lobby, providing food. The hospital's providing food. The hospital's providing social work services. Now, Boston Medical Center is saying no more. And that is for two reasons. First, they cite safety concerns, that they are less able to respond to other emergencies when they have tons of people staying in their lobby. Second, they have seen a big spike in the number of people staying there. So last week, an internal memo to BMC that we obtained said that 131 individuals slept on the floor one night last week. But every night, this is happening. So now they say, the spokesperson said, they are providing transportation for these people to go elsewhere, wherever the families want to go. But many of these families have come from Haiti or from elsewhere, but the vast majority from Haiti, and don't actually have anywhere else to go.
So then what? Where are they supposed to go?
That is the question. Boston Medical Center suggested go stay with a relative, go stay with a church, any other secure 24-hour building. But the reality is that some of them have been going to, as you said, Logan Airport. I called up Gerald Gabeau, who runs IFSI, the Immigration Family Services Institute, which serves a lot of Haitians. And she said they're not sending them to the airport to send them back to where they came from. They're sending them there because it's open 24 hours a day. It has security. It has restrooms. You can buy food. So she said it's just because it's open. But she says this is not a suitable solution.
This is out of desperation when it feels that you have absolutely no other way. So you are using the basically worst case scenario, which is the airport.
She also says the airport is a particularly scary place for some of these families because that's where you find immigration officials.
People do not want to see, you know, an ICE agent or someone, people in uniform with those big dogs. So those are, you know, situations that are going to create more traumatic experience for those families who have already gone through so much.
So she and others are calling on the state to open welcome and intake centers that are available and open 24 hours a day, in addition to the whole state-run shelter system.
And I want to note for listeners, next week we're going to take an in-depth look at what's happening in Haiti and how it's affecting us here. And Gerald Gabeau will be joining us here on Radio Boston for that. Gabriella, I'm going to have you sit tight because I'm going to bring in another voice now. Beth Chambers is Vice President of Basic Needs for Catholic Charities of Boston, which also operates emergency and specialty shelters in the state. And I'm just going to note that at one point, Beth and I worked together when I was several years ago president of Catholic Charities. Beth, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Beth, as one engaged in the work in this ecosystem, your reactions as a service to provider to this move by Boston Medical Center?
We were very surprised. And then at the same time, what we were seeing at our Dorchester office all of a sudden with more and more people coming in looking for services, it all went together. So we were going from, you know, 20, 30 people a day coming to our office to even more starting as soon as we opened at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I agree with what Dr. Gabeau is saying, and knowing her and the work that she's done with this community, and listening to the others, it's what we're seeing every single day in our work and in our sites. And now we, you know, have opened one of the shelter hotels after we were asked to do so. So we're seeing that part of it firsthand, and there aren't enough beds, and there are a number of people coming in, but we're working with 48 rooms, and you know, we see that many people a day at our Dorchester office looking for housing to go into that night.
So it's a tremendous strain.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And the unfortunate part is that when people come in, you know, as Dr. Gabo was saying about going to Logan Airport and going, we were telling people previously to go to Boston Medical Center because it was the only place for folks to go at night. And we don't have, you know, we don't have shelter beds in our offices. We don't have room in our offices. And our shelters go through DHCD to get into them. So it's one where, you know, this can take a matter of days for folks to go into them. And now, as we've seen, the hotels are spread out all over the greater Boston area.
Go ahead. No, finish that sentence, Beth.
So it's going, you know, great distances from Boston, from where they don't know Boston anyways, and then going to these further out areas where they know even less about not just the community, but what's the next step? What is the next thing that they can do? So that's where we are trying everything as far as helping with we will have housing workers. We have folks who help with mass applications and SNAP applications and just having a place where they can have a bed at night and be with their families and hopefully move to that next part of finding housing that they need. And as was stated, you know, to look for jobs in the future.
Picking back up there, and that's Beth Chambers, who's the Vice President of Basic Needs for Catholic Charities. We also have here in studio Gabriella Emanuel of WBUR as we look at the strain as more migrants are coming in on the emergency shelter system here. So two things I want to pick up on there. First, you know, to this point about the numbers, we got some data from the Healy administration just before the show, and one of the pieces was this caseload increase month over month. Mm-hmm. So, for example, 191 more people from May to June, for example, in the data that they sent. So, Gabriella, I'll turn to you. One of the things that Beth Chambers just hit several times was this overnight concept. Yeah. We are a right-to-shelter state. We are the right-to-shelter state, which means for most people over 21 and those who are pregnant, you have a right to shelter. But this overnight thing, you were talking to me about it before the show. This is really important.
Right. So as a right to shelter state, families, eligible families, get access to shelter. But you need to go through what can be a long and complicated application process to get there. So that takes days and overnights. And there's no kind of stopgap for where those families should be going. Other places like New York City provide hotels while you're applying. Massachusetts does not do that.
So that creates this gap. You may be in the process of getting services, but maybe your first night, there's just no place to be.
Exactly.
So, Beth Chambers, what is the conversation, briefly please, between organizations and the Healy administration in this moment?
The governor's office has reached out to a number of the agencies, including ours, to look at where can we find more housing? What can we do to help more people in the midst of all of this? You know, we have these hotels and it is working wonderfully for us, but it is something where we need to move to the next level to find more and more housing. And looking at the number of people who are coming to our office, to other agencies, within Boston, we know that we have to do more. And so we have been talking to the governor's office and with the lieutenant governor on, you know, ideas and planning for the future.
And Gabriella, there was a list in the Boston Herald of the communities where the state is contracted with hotels. There were more than 20 on that list. You have said the state has been saying it plans to open at least more welcome centers.
Tell us
about that.
Right. So welcome centers is a new thing that kind of came onto the scene just a few weeks ago. This is places where families, particularly migrants, can go to get basic needs, diapers, food, and they can get connected with resources. They opened the first one in Alston, and they say more are supposed to be coming online soon. They haven't specified where or when, But the other problem is those also close at night. They have evening hours and they have weekend hours, which is a big improvement, according to homeless advocates, but they don't have complete 24-hour coverage.
So, and according to the Healy administration, my team is telling us here, cities and towns with emergency assistance shelter units are 71 right now. So, Beth Chambers, in our last 30 seconds or so, what do you want people to understand about this situation?
I think I want the fact that a number of agencies have been called in to help, and knowing them and seeing what we're doing in the hotel that we're running, that, you know, we're just serving people with dignity. We know that there's a need, and we know that we have been called to help, and we're doing it. And whether it be, you know, trying to find yesterday a double stroller, or having diapers on hand and calling on volunteers and calling on, for us, different parishes to help out, people are coming forward and doing that. And we are grateful. And then at the same time, we know that we will be asking for more and more. But the fact is, we're doing it with dignity, and we're taking care of folks.
Thanks, Beth. And Gabrielle, in a couple of sentences, what are you watching?
I'd like to see whether the state announces something open 24 hours, and also what other hospitals are doing, because other hospitals like Boston Children's have also been supporting these families.
All right, WBUR Senior Health and Science reporter Gabriella Emanuel and Beth Chambers, Vice President of Basic Needs for Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Boston. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.